the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is the hero of Skyworld himself, Kyle JCRB Cross.
Oh man, that's the pits. Wait, no, it's just one pit. Okay, yeah.
Oh, bravo, bravo.
Thank you, thank you.
So how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm tired because as of this recording, we just got off our like 3-hour-ish marathon of Team Sonic Racing live streaming.
Yes.
If you were a patron and got to see, goody. If you were not a patron and got to see, I hope you enjoyed. And you can get that kind of goodness every Sunday if you're a patron. And every so often on the Twitch channel. But
yes, indeed.
That's plugs for the end of the show.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. But we had a good time with it. We really liked the game. I definitely enjoyed it. The soundtrack is a massive highlight, but the gameplay is super fun, too. So if you enjoyed Team Sonic, if you enjoyed Sonic and All-Stars, the Sonic and All-Stars racing games, then yeah, this is pretty much a no-brainer.
Now, there is something that Aaliyah pointed out after we stopped the stream, and it distresses me immensely.
What's that?
It doesn't look like there's a sound test option.
No, but the soundtrack just came out today, too. Same time. A simultaneous soundtrack release. So there is that, at least.
Okay.
Yeah, so the soundtrack's out there. I think you probably just like even get it on like Spotify or whatever. You can stream it.
Yes, so I want it now. I would like, my hands with the game. Give me.
I'd like a sound test, too, but, you know, it's still out there. It's out there. So I think this is the first time that a Sonic game and the Sonic game's soundtrack has been released simultaneously. So that's awesome.
Hopefully that's a trend because
yeah,
Sonic games have fantastic soundtracks and I need it, Kyle. I need it in my ear holes.
Yes, indeed. So yeah, soundtrack is out there. All right. Well, we're tired, but we are going to power through this episode. And talk about something not Sonic related in the slightest.
No, but once we get deeper in, I think I'm going to find my energy again because we're talking about Kid Icarus.
Yes, indeed. Yep, finally.
That tentpole of the Nintendo franchises that only has 3 games to its name. So it's kind of a very thin tentpole, but it's one of those that people just kind of bring up because it's unique.
Yeah, it's been sort of, I would say, criminally overlooked. For decades, it was a series that was criminally overlooked for decades, and I'd argue might still be, even though it gets a lot more recognition now, thanks to Smash Brothers. But yeah, it's definitely one of those games that always like, sort of skirted under the radar. It was also it was more popular in the West than it was in Japan. So I think that's another thing that kind of kept it out of the limelight. For as long as it was, because Metroid kind of suffers from the same problem, and F-Zero and Star Fox, they tend to go dormant for a long time. So, but none have gone as dormant for as long as Kid Icarus has. So,
but at the same time, none of them came back with the same roaring success.
Very true.
That pit did, but starting it with its humble beginnings, the original Kid Icarus. Is a charming little game. If you haven't had a chance to play it, it's accessible if you are a online Switch account owner. It's part of the free games.
It's been re-released on every virtual console.
It's definitely
out there.
But the online, the Switch's arcade has the bonus of both the regular version and the just jump ahead to the final boss with all the gear. Version.
Right.
Which is nice because I never could get past the first region myself because I'm bad at retro games.
Oh, so man. Bad. I played through it recently, actually. I went ahead and played through it for this episode specifically. I played through both the original game and the Game Boy game. And the NES game is definitely an improvement, or I would say definitely better than the Game Boy game, even if the Game Boy game is on a technical level, an improvement over the first game. Mm-hmm, but it just doesn't have the same charm, and it doesn't have the same... There's just something about it that's just not... I don't know. It just doesn't really hit me the same. And I think a lot of that boils down to the soundtrack,
yep,
which is by the legendary Hip Tanaka, who did Dr. Mario, Super Mario Land, and some tracks in Earthbound. He did Gyromite for the NES. He was basically an NES staple, and also did a lot of Game Boy work. And it's one of those soundtracks that just still holds up to this day. And the game is definitely worth its legendary status, but it's a little janky.
They were pioneering new roads.
Right, right. And the translation is a little off. The localization is not great. But
that's part of its rustic charm.
Exactly, exactly. And that's one of the things that just makes it kind of fun.
If you have never played or watched or experienced the original at all, and you're coming into this blind, basically it's a 2D platforming shooter, if you boil it down just to the barest mechanics.
Kinda, yeah.
And it's really funky in that you usually have just one screen of action, but it wraps. So you can walk off the left or the right side of the screen and come out on the opposite end.
Honestly, to me, it sort of plays like this. It's a little bit of a like a combination of Mega Man's single screen obstacle course stuff and Metroid, which the Metroid connection makes sense because it's the same development team using the same engine as Metroid. It's right. Literally a reskin Metroid or Metroid reskin. I'm not sure which. It could go either way. They might have been developed almost simultaneously, but yeah, it's like one. It's funny too because one is a very mythological based, sort of, you know, goes into angels and demons and stuff like that, and then the other one is like this hardcore sci-fi epic story. So they couldn't be more different from each other, and yet they're still kind of like sister games in a way. So I like that.
That and Kid Icarus's presentation, even at the beginning, is quirkier than Metroid.
Oh, absolutely.
Metroid's definitely got kind of a very hard sci-fi, spooky angle to it, whereas in Kid Icarus, if you have enough hearts, you can buy a credit card that allows you to make larger purchases.
Yeah.
And one of the incentives is to rack up the number of mallets that you're holding in the earlier stages so that when you get through the boss temple, you can use those mallets to break free the centurions that have been turned to stone by Medusa. And I don't know, just something about that's kind of weird. One of the enemies is basically a flying nose and glasses.
Yes.
And I love the fact that as the series went on, as limited as it did, it really embraced that quirkiness close and said, this is mine. I own this.
Yep. And one of the enemies in the later world is literally a Metroid. It's just a straight up Metroid. I mean, it doesn't attach to your head, at least not in this game. We'll get into that a little bit later, but in the first game, yeah, it's just a straight up Metroid. So it even pretty much says in the manual, this is a creature from another world, from an alien world. It's like, oh, okay, I see what you're doing there, Nintendo. I see. Yeah, so they're very good, like, counterpoint games that are also quite similar in a way. So I really enjoyed the first Kid Icarus.
And I know what you're talking about with the second game. I've never played it myself, but I watched a few playthroughs to get a feel for it. And visually, it's sturdier.
Yeah.
And the scope of the levels in comparison are much larger, which is really impressive, you know, given that the Game Boy was not that much more powerful than the NES, right?
The Game Boy was actually less powerful than the NES.
Well, there you go then. I mean, or if I'm not
it depends,
mistaken,
it kind of depends on par or less. It's
splitting hairs at that point.
Yeah, pretty much.
But correct me if I'm wrong, I think the final boss of Myths and Monsters is actually a free-flying dogfight.
Yeah, kind of. I will say that the bosses are an absolute nightmare. I hated them. I hated all of the bosses in the second game. The first boss is a teleporting, like, minotaur that just
takes forever.
It
to
just
kill.
Not only yeah. Well, all of the bosses take absolutely forever. It is just horrendous how awful the bosses are. I do not recommend playing the second game specifically because of the bosses. The bosses are terrible. Ugh. The last boss.
Technical splendor of the flying and fighting.
A
game of that era.
The impressiveness wears off very quickly. it's just so freaking between the bosses being taking forever to kill and just being a huge pain. It really soured the whole experience, which is a shame because the rest of the game was a lot of fun. I didn't mind the rest of the game at all, but that the bosses just killed it, and it was sad. So the soundtrack is not nearly as good either. It's kind of bland,
completely forgettable.
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, it definitely feels outsourced because it was. Partially, at least. And it actually never even came out in Japan. It was just a Western release only. So, And apparently killed the franchise for 22 years.
Phoenix.
And as far as I can tell, Kid Icarus Uprising doesn't really even acknowledge it at all.
Not really. I think there might be a handful of enemies that showed up.
Yeah, but even then, the enemies of Myths and Monsters are pretty much just the same ones from the previous game for the most part. There's a few unique ones here and there, but.
But then we had Pit updated for Brawl.
Yes,
and everyone was like, "Oh, this looks amazing!" And look, these little hints of Palutena and the Sky World in Subspace Emissary look fantastic. Why don't you finally update Kid Icarus, Nintendo? And they did. And glorious Sakurai, forever enshrined may his name be, gave us everything. And honestly, I feel like he gave us too much.
I don't know. I played up to like chapter 4.
Oh my god.
I know I need to get further. And you can spoil it for me, it's fine. But I'm just saying, I only played up to like chapter 4, and I know it gets better. But even what I've played so far is really good. I really, really love it.
Here's the thing: Uprising's first 4 or 5-ish chapters. It's been a while, so I don't remember exactly how it goes. But the first bit is basically the original Kid Icarus all over again, saying, you know what you imagined those pixels looked like as you were struggling? This is how it's supposed to look. So you have Twin Bellows actually looking like a giant fiery beast. You have Hydra flying around. They actually do something a little more interesting with Thanatos. It's just, everything about it is fantastic. And then you wrap it up and you're like, is that it for the game? I mean, that was really cool, but that was basically just Kid Icarus on steroids, and then the rest of the game kicks in, and you're like, and it keeps going, and it keeps going, and it keeps going, until by the end of it, you're exhausted, but it feels so good, Kyle.
Yes. But even just those first 4 chapters, there's so much personality and everything. The characters are delightful. I freaking love Pit and Palutena's back and forth banter. It's
now
wonderful.
The story goes, from my understanding, that when Sakurai was handing it off to the localization team, he told them, go nuts. You know, don't try to adhere word to word to the story. The main story is obviously still the same.
Yeah.
But the game relies so much on certain cultural jokes and puns and just clever wordplay. Some of that just is not going to translate. And so the localization team was basically told to go carte blanche on it and just make it funny for the Western audiences. And I greatly appreciate that on his part as a creator to entrust so much of the vision to a different team.
Yeah. The fact that they make fourth wall breaking jokes like it's been 25 years since you last seen Medusa. It's like, yeah, it has been. It's more than that now. But at the time the game came out, 25 years.
There's a bit somewhere where Pitt says, okay, Politano, this has been bugging me for a while. Who is this Kid Icarus guy? I keep hearing about him, but he never shows up.
And then I like how sometimes it'll show like the, it'll show enemies on the bottom screen and they're the old NES style enemies. Like I think Hugh Draw is one of them that shows up and he's like, Pitt's like, what, this guy, Hugh Draw? You mean this guy? He's like, yeah, that guy, but no, not that guy. Definitely not that guy.
Especially when Thanatos shows up, because in the original game, he was just like a projectile that Medusa fired out
right
during the final boss. And now he's a fully realized character.
Oh, no.
And I love glam villains, and Thanatos and you'll meet him later, Hades, are the epitome of glam villains. They're threatening, but they are so charismatic and entertaining.
Yeah.
That you just want to wallow in their dialogue. Hades is perhaps my favorite bit of Uprising. If you take all of it together, his dialogue, his presentation, the way he just schmoozes through every scene, Kyle. And during the final fight, he has one of my favorite lines, because it's both this joke that you see coming from a mile away, but the delivery and the circumstance makes it utterly terrifying. And I love that dichotomy, especially when it comes to the villains. Oh, just Kyle. Games. So the final boss itself, the final boss, is this absolute gauntlet of escalation that's exhausting to get through both emotionally and physically. And I love everything about it. And I love this game so much. It's too bad that I don't really like the on foot sections.
Yeah, the on foot sections kind of. The controls. I'm not a huge fan of the controls, and I think part of the problem is me. I think part of the problem is that I'm left-handed. That makes things a bit more challenging. You can change it to where you use the buttons for directional controls, but even then that's still awkward because I'm not used to using the buttons for directional controls. So it's a little strange. It's taken some time to get used to. I've kind of gotten used to it, but it's definitely something that's made things a little bit more challenging just on a personal level for me. I don't know how well it handles for other people. I don't know. The flying sections are great.
Yeah.
But on foot, it's definitely a little bit of a chore. It's not bad, but it's one of those things where it's like, okay, if there's one complaint I have about this game, it's the controls are not the best.
It was a major common complaint when the game came out, and it even prompted Nintendo to release a special docking port for people to balance
the
3DS on.
Yeah, I have that.
I will say that Sakurai answered this critique by saying people are holding onto their systems too tightly. And I thought, okay, that's just blowing smoke, but when I did relax my grip, it actually did make a difference and it felt more natural.
He's not wrong, I will
say. That being said, it's still kind of cumbersome, and I think it's just because of the way that they tried to design the game around the system.
Yeah, and I think the other problem is too is that now we've got the XL, 3DS XL, so it's a bit heavier, so it's harder to hold like that. So.
Right.
I do have the stand, and I'm not holding it forever, but yeah, it definitely does help to kind of loosen your grip on it a little bit too. So, but it's still, that's like the one complaint I have. It's just like the controls aren't quite as smooth as I'd want them to be.
I mean, they work.
Oh,
it's just they're cumbersome. If you haven't played the game, which shame on you, there's two modes of gameplay. Pretty much every level starts off with you in a flying 3D shooter, Star Fox-esque, and all the action takes place on the top screen while you aim with the stylus on the bottom screen, and you fly around with the D-pad. And that for the most part, works. There's more details and minutiae to it, but that's the core mechanic.
Yeah, it works pretty well. Yeah.
On the ground, again, all the action takes place on the top screen, and you control the camera and your speed with the stylus while kind of moving with the D-pad as well, which is already a little funky.
Yeah,
and the trick is...
You strafe with the directional controls.
Yeah, okay.
And you have to swipe to turn around or to turn, which is takes some time to get used to. It's a little awkward.
On top of that, in the stages you can find certain consumables like grenades and turrets and other things that will stay as an inventory item on the bottom of the screen, but it's very tricky to hit that precise point when a lot of stuff is going on, and there's a lot of stuff going on, and steer while you're doing that. On top of that, there's a kind of mini game equipment screen where you unlock various perks like auto heal, or you can place jump pads, you can get invulnerability shields. There's a whole slew of perks you can get, and they all come in different shapes that you have to fit Tetris style within a limited space.
Yeah.
And those perks all remain accessible on the bottom screen. So you're managing two different inventory menus and you're aiming all with the stylus. And that is not great.
No, definitely. They tried to build it around the touchscreen, which I thought we got over that, Nintendo. I thought you did that with the DS. I thought you'd had enough, but apparently not. Build it around the touchscreen.
That being said, as cumbersome as it is, it does work.
It does.
Is functional, and once you get into the rhythm that the game wants you to be in, you can pull off some pretty impressive stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's just getting over that hurdle might sour the experience for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I say power through it because, oh, my God, Kyle, I love this game so much.
All right. Do we have to address the gorilla in the room? The soundtrack gorilla in the room?
The fact that it is perhaps the finest soundtrack ever to grace humanity in the history of our entire species.
It is absolutely incredible, and it's due to the fact that it's like a freaking all-star cast of video game music composers. It's freaking insane who's on board with this. You got Motoi Sakuraba, who's like the main guy for the Tales series. You got Yasunori Mitsuda, legendary composer of Chrono Trigger, Yuzo Koshiro, who did Streets of Rage and ActRaiser, Masafumi Takada from God Hand and No More Heroes, and Noriyuki Iwadare from Lunar and Grandia. And holy crap, that is like, if I could assemble a team of Japanese game composers, that would be one hell of a team I would put together. I would put that team together in a heartbeat, man. That's freaking amazing. So yeah, the soundtrack is just outstanding. It's one of the best game soundtracks I've ever heard, and I don't say that lightly.
No. There's a lot of good competition out there, but it's kind of like, okay, Sakurai, we need you to relaunch this franchise for us. And he goes, okay. And they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And it just rises like a monolith and overshadows everything Nintendo has ever.
And he just pulls out all the stops. go figure. Leave it to him to pull out all the stops and just keep going.
There was an interview with him at some point that said, okay, you've done so much with this. What do you do for an encore? And he basically said, you don't.
No.
This game is meant to be the Kid Icarus game for a while. I have put everything into it. We're not going to just churn out sequel after sequel after sequel. And on the one hand, I appreciate that because there is so much content to be had. But on the other hand, it was so good, I want another one, Carl!
I can appreciate that, though. I appreciate that he's like, This is the definitive game. This is it, man. This is it. I have assembled this master team with these amazing legendary composers to make this freaking be all end all soundtrack. a fantastic looking game that just plays, even with the weird control, still plays great. And it's so much fun. And it's funny because it's funny that it started out with a 25 years beforehand with just a silly little angel sprite in a silly old Nintendo game.
Now, earlier I said he may have put too much in, and I'm specifically thinking of the weapon system, because there are nine? There's a lot of different weapon classes.
I looked at it and I'm like, I don't know if I should like really delve much into this.
And in addition to the different weapon classes, there's multiple different types of weapon in each class, each one with different characteristics, different perks, and each of those weapons individually will sometimes come with their own unique buff or debuff. And there's this labyrinth of a system where you can craft items together to get different weapons with, you know, stacking bonuses on top of each other, which costs hearts, which you farm by playing stages, which you raise the difficulty to get more hearts. And it's too much. I actually got burned out on it.
Yeah.
To the point where I picked the weapon that I was competent with and said, screw it, not touching the rest.
Yeah, I looked at the weapon system and I'm just like, why is there so much here? Why is this so complicated? I just want to play the game. I like it, though. I like it. It's just, man, there's so much. So much. Oh, man. Have we just about gushed over Kid Icarus enough?
Can you ever?
True.
I don't know. It's just, if it's a game that you passed on because the franchise is not really time tested, or because you heard that the control scheme was less than desirable, I have to say, hunt down a copy if you can. Yes, the controls on the ground are a little clunky, and sometimes it's a little overwhelming with all the character banter while all the other combat's going on the screen. But it's such a rich experience. And the characters are so charming. And the humor is spot on. And the stakes mount higher and higher in just ways that you never see coming. I desperately want them to give this same kind of treatment to Myth and Monsters. I mean, just imagine that untouched section of Kid Icarus as the sequel fodder. It could totally work. And it's so good. It's so good, Kyle.
It is very good, and I need to delve more into it. So I really enjoyed the first game, though, too. So if you want to give that one a shot, I recommend that one for sure. Don't worry about Myths and Monsters. It's not really necessary. But I would say that the first one is a really great classic retro NES game that you shouldn't miss out on for sure. And Kid Icarus is Uprising is a modern classic.
Almost forgot. Just the ridiculous amount of oomph they put behind relaunching this franchise. There were also the 3 or 4 animated shorts that launched with it exclusively through the 3DS channel viewer that didn't go anywhere. But the point is, they did like 3 or 4 different independent short animations just to promote the game. They're not like actually tied to the story in any significant way. And they are wildly different styles and tones. I mean, one's an extended story of Palutena trying to make a vegetable dinner and accidentally giving life to all the vegetables. And so they revolt and try to take over Skyworld.
Okay.
It's a comedy of errors, basically starring Palutena being an absolute dork. And it's fantastic start to finish. The fact that they put that much into it to try to get this off the ground. I hope it paid dividends, because I'd love to see Kid Icarus come back yet again.
And of course, we can't forget Palutena's guidance from Smash 4 and Smash Ultimate. Yeah, that's so much fun. Just more in-jokes upon in-jokes upon in-jokes. And it's great. I love it.
I understand why they wouldn't be doing new entries for the DLC characters, but at the same time, I kind of wish
they would
splurge on it. They don't need to.
I know.
It'd probably over budget, but oh my God.
It's a real missed opportunity, but man, it's even what we have is just so much fun. All right. I think we have officially gushed on Kid Icarus for now.
The power of flight has run out. It is time to move on.
Indeed. All right. If you want to ask some Q&A questions, head on over to patreon.com/bumblecast and you can get your questions bumped to the head of the line, or you can just email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com or Twitter @bumblecast. Just send us an at over there and we'll get it added to the rather lengthy list that we'll probably be answering within the 100 episode special, but we'll see how that goes. We'll definitely be answering a lot of questions for that. So if you want to get your questions in, then do that.
Also, if you want to get your question the priority status, but you don't want to become a patron, over to ko-fi.com/bumblecast and you can buy your way to the head of the line there too. Just make sure to specify who you are and what your question is. Because if we just see the $5 pop in with nothing else attached to it, we're not going to know what to do with it.
Yep, that's ko-fi.com/bumblecast. So if you want to do a one-time donation, totally cool. We will allow it. All right. We are ready for the priority Q&A, Ian. Are we ready
We are.
Are we ready for Scruffy Matt to start us off like he always does?
Always.
Yes. All right, here's one from Scruffy Matt. I don't know who that guy is, but he's a guy, and he certainly answers or asks questions. This is actually related to him doing his Sonic marathons in the past, where he will play through like what he thinks is all the essential Sonic games. And so his question is, if you were planning a Sonic marathon, which games would you consider vital to include? Which ones would be maybes, and which games would you avoid at all costs? In this scenario, imagine that you have no time constraints and the entire Sonic game library is available to you.
Oh, jeez. are we talking vital in terms of representing the evolution of the franchise, or vital as in these are key to the gray, gooey mess that is the lore? That gives you a little bit of wiggle room on what.
Yeah, things to avoid. I would say it's probably might be easier to just say the games like that I outright would not include.
Right,
like the Sonic Boom games, I wouldn't really bother with.
No, sadly, even though I did have fun with Shattered Crystal.
I do like Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, but I feel like it's so far removed from the rest of the games, even the rest of the spinoff games, that I'm kind of hesitant to include it.
I wouldn't put Spinball in there just because I never really thought it was that much fun.
See, and I like Spinball, so I would put Spinball in there because
okay.
I enjoy it, and I've at least beaten it, so... I would say games that you can beat would be ones you might want to include.
See, like, I wouldn't put Sonic 06 in there because even though it is this...
gloriously broken mess?
Yes.
Let's go with
it's
that.
It's so frustrating to play.
It is.
That if I were putting together a marathon to showcase the gameplay, you wouldn't get much entertainment out of it. After the initial, haha, look at Ian wanting to break his controller. I've seen other playthroughs where people have gone through the torture of it and laughed at their misery, but that was kind of special circumstances, and at this point, everybody already knows the joke.
Right.
So.
I would leave out the racing games. Even though I love the racing games, they're not really crucial, I would say.
No, and... you know, you look at the Riders series, and those are so different from one another.
Oh, and let's not even talk about Free Riders.
Yeah, I actually spent money on that.
I heard. I heard the nightmare that was Free Riders.
They're just so different that they don't really represent the franchise that much. The Riders, you know, kind of sub-brand. I mean, it's all air boards, of course, but just they're very mechanically different in a lot of ways. So yeah, I'd go with you there.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, and like Sonic Drift and Sonic R and stuff. Yeah.
I mean, I adore Sonic R, but I wouldn't really say that's indicative of Sonic.
No. Even though it does kind of suck to leave something at, it kind of sucks to leave Saturn kind of hanging. Although I guess we have Sonic the Fighters, which is a quick game. You can whip through Sonic the Fighters pretty quick, so.
No.
That wouldn't be too bad to include in a marathon.
I'd probably skip over Knuckles Chaotix, because at this point it's become irrelevant to the overall franchise.
I know, but I like Knuckles Chaotix. It's just so, I know, it's I just do so too. Nice and colorful, and the soundtrack is delightful, and it's just
the stages just are a bit of a chore to get through.
Though. They are, but it's such a pretty game to look at and to listen to that I'd be hesitant to leave it out, even though I know it's not great. I adore Sonic CD, and I would definitely put that in, but I know...
Well, yeah, that's a given. You have to do Sonic CD.
Okay. I was worried you might not want to put Sonic CD in, because I know you're not a huge fan of it.
I'm not a huge fan of it, but it's one of the classic games.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's Sonic CD, man.
It is...
Even though I'm terrible at it and not really fond of the design, it's still Sonic CD. I'm not going to poo-poo that just out of principle. Yeah.
It has solidified itself in the pantheon of Sonic games, I would say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, especially after the re-release, the Christian Whitehead re-release.
I would not spend time on Sonic Advance 1, but I would do 2 and 3.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because 1 doesn't really do anything remarkable. And 2 and 3 at least have the additions of Cream and all the fun bonus combo character interaction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would also do both of the Rush games.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially the first one, but also the second one too. They're both a lot of fun. And I love Blaze, so I gotta have something with Blaze in it.
Now, I'm a bit of an apologist for the Rivals games. I enjoyed them.
See, I have not even played them. Like, I haven't even really seen them at all.
That's the thing. They were PSP, so.
Right, yeah. I don't even know if they're, like, playable on the PS3 or anything.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think they've been kind of forgotten to time, but they were the closest we got to Sonic R2, because it was one-on-one races, you and the AI, or you and somebody else in multiplayer, going down these obstacle course tracks using items and special abilities to get to the finish line first. It was, you know, it was just a straightforward track, and there was some minor platforming, and I really dug it.
Yeah.
I thought the soundtrack was neat. I thought it looked nice. The stories were rife with interesting little lore bits that I think have been uncanonized. I don't know. But I enjoyed them, but they are so far on the fringe that I probably wouldn't. I'm thinking, you know, if we were to do a marathon, it would be a concise thing. Because even if time was unlimited, touching on every game within the franchise would be possible. That's just...
Nobody wants to sit through that. I'm hesitant to bring up the Game Gear games, but I like them. I like the Game Gear games, so I would kind of be into playing them.
Or at least play Chaos, at least.
Yeah, Chaos for sure. I also like Triple Trouble. I don't mind Triple Trouble too much, but yeah, Chaos
never
is great.
Never got around to that one, unfortunately.
Chaos is great. I also like the first game. The second game is kind of a pain. Certain bosses are annoying, but I don't know. I like them all, but it's just like, oh man, this is getting to be a lot. I think the original Genesis trilogy goes without saying. I don't think we need to bother necessarily bringing that up. Sonic Adventure 1 and 2, obviously.
I was going to say, anything we haven't specifically said no to would just be assumed in.
Unleashed, how do you feel? What do you think about Unleashed? Because I'm kind of 50-50 on it.
Unleashed definitely has its issues in its length and pacing, but it's so pretty. Even to today. It set up what I feel is the correct way to do 3D Sonic. And the soundtrack, like so many others, is freaking phenomenal.
Very true.
I will listen to Empire Hub Day on loop until I die, Kyle. Yes, doesn't matter how many times you have to werehog your way through that crazy brass section. As soon as you get back to Empire City Day Hub, it's all good. All is forgiven.
True, true. Obviously, colors and generations.
Yes, because they're the best too.
I like Lost World. I don't mind Lost World at all.
Lost World frustrates me because I see what it could have been.
True. But yeah, it's definitely... It does seem a little weird to go, all right, we have something solid with generations. We have something solid with colors and generations. And then immediately to be like, nope, we're not bothering with that anymore. Let's build something else again. That gets frustrating.
It is, but they did reinvent the wheel. And the engine that is Lost World, I think, is phenomenal. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It plays well. It's got lots of neat ideas in it. It's just the game itself felt like a tech demo.
A little bit, yeah. The earlier levels, I think, hold up better than the later levels.
Yeah.
Forces, I don't mind Forces. I would play it. It's not too long, so there is that.
No, it's very arcadey.
I had fun with Forces, too. I didn't mind it at all. I know some people who absolutely despise Forces and everything it stands for, and they think it's the most awful Sonic game ever. And I'm like, really? Have you played Sonic 06? Have you played Sonic Boom?
Have you played Sonic Heroes?
Oh, I forgot about Sonic Heroes. I would play Sonic Heroes in a marathon.
If we were doing just the 3D games and we had to pick and choose, I would play Forces well before Heroes.
I understand that. I have a soft spot for Heroes. I really do. I know it's not great. I know it's not, but it's
visually stunning, and again, soundtrack is top-notch. The gameplay is garbage.
It's frustrating. I know. But it's... I just like it. I just have a soft spot for it. It's always one of those games I have a soft spot for, even though I know in my heart of hearts it's not the greatest. All right. I think we've touched on just about everything we can touch on, almost.
Also, Sonic Labyrinth sucks. There you go. We wouldn't touch that one.
And like Sega Sonic Arcade, and we wouldn't bother with that. Sonic 3D Blast. I would say I'd play the director's cut of Sonic 3D Blast.
Yeah, there you go.
I like that one. I like the director's cut. It definitely improves a lot. Okay, so we're one question in on this Q&A section. All right, next question comes from AE Double. When it comes to series that focus on non-human characters and nobody liking the human characters, like with Transformers and Godzilla, do you have any opinions on human characters in the Sonic series that aren't Eggman? We all know we love Eggman.
That is a sticky wicket.
It is.
If you had asked me this at like the Sonic Adventure 1 and 2 era, I would have been very clearly bad idea. Never should have gone there. Eggman should have just been the one weird off human, and it didn't add anything to the narrative, and I don't like it. But then we got Unleashed, and who was the art design team that did that?
I don't know.
They've done Power Pack, they did Gwenpool.
Oh, I'm not sure.
You know who they are. They have this beautiful, solid Kyutsu style. They've done a ton of stuff. Nerds. Anyway, that representation of humans within a Sonic world worked a whole lot more for me because it felt like an extension of that world, and they were characters. You know, you compare the president and the gun commander to Professor Pickle and Wintos, the traveling salesman.
Yeah.
They're worlds apart, but Pickle and Wintos feel like Sonic characters to me. I mean, yes, they're human, but they feel like characters that exist in this larger-than-life cartoony world, whereas the president and the commander and even Gerald and Maria to a degree are so stiff and wooden and realistic that they stick out like a sore thumb.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've gotten to the point where the humans are ingrained in things, but they are also kind of on the fringe, so they're not getting underfoot anymore. So I feel like they serve their purpose, if the story utilizes them correctly. If they take the route of, you know, Transformers and God, great examples where the focus is taken off of Sonic and whatever forgettable trial and tribulation the squishy humans have, that's the problem.
Right.
If they are facilitating Sonic's story like Professor Pickle did, then I think they work a lot better.
Yeah. I think they can work. It just depends on their usage. Let's go ahead and get into the next question from Andrew D. Says, you are each given the reins to Super Smash Bros. Ultimate's Fighter Pass DLC. Anything within reason goes. That means any video game character can be chosen, potentially being able to break that rule, but within reason. Question, who would you each personally choose for the five fighters, each of their stages, and some must-haves for stage music? Bonus, now lose one of those awesome choices because Joker was chosen. Who will you remove? All right, this is a very deep, this is a very complex question.
It is.
We've had two complex questions on the priority Q&A. You guys need to calm down a little bit. Rein it in. I'm kidding, but still, you know.
I don't know.
It's so hard to say. Shantae and Shovel Knight, I would say yes. I've been saying that for years, so I guess that's two of mine in there already.
I stand by Banjo-Kazooie.
Banjo-Kazooie would be good.
I know they only had three games under Nintendo, and they are a Microsoft thing, but I feel like they were kind of the platforming icons of the N64. You know, you had Mario 64 and you had Banjo-Kazooie. Those were the bar set for everyone else that tried to follow.
Sure. Honestly, with the relationship that Microsoft has been forming with Nintendo for the last year or so, that's not an unlikely possibility.
I've seen a lot of debate back and forth over whether it'll be that or it will be some kind of Minecraft rep.
I would prefer Banjo-Kazooie.
I would too, but the fact that Minecraft is so much more influential on the industry and the history of the medium, I could understand why it would be represented first.
I understand that too, but I still would prefer Banjo-Kazooie.
I'm right there with you. I'm understanding of both sides of the argument.
Right, right. And I am too, but, you know, still, personal preference.
Back with Smash 4, especially when they said Bandai Namco was assisting, I wanted Lloyd Irving playable. Yes, it's another anime dude with swords, but he was...
A Tails, you know, character in general would just be cool.
Yeah, but Lloyd was the primary character from Tales of Symphonia, which debuted on the GameCube and pretty much saved the Tails franchise from obscurity.
Yeah, it did. It really did.
If you want something that is, you know, indicative of Bandai Namco, indicative of Nintendo, and their relationship with the franchise, I feel like he's the poster child to use. And yeah, we got a costume, but that's not the same.
No. I would say, I'd like the fact that they put Pac-Man in before that as a sort of representative Yeah, I mean, you gotta have Pac-Man. If you're gonna have a gathering of legendary video game characters, I would say Pac-Man is pretty much a shoo-in. But absolutely, as far as, like, saving an entire franchise, yeah, having Lloyd as a representative for Tales of Symphonia is a good choice.
That, and, you know, we have Cloud, who, for better or worse, has kind of become the face of Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Terra would have been cooler, but what do I know?
Yeah.
And rumors seem to be pushing that there's going to be a Dragon Quest rep, which makes sense since Dragon Quest is the most popular RPG series, period.
Mm-hmm.
So the Tales of series has always kind of lingered in third place, but it's still a pretty prominent one. So if we get our Dragon Quest one in, I'd like to see someone from Tales, please.
I definitely wouldn't mind it. And I don't mind having some Dragon Quest rep either. I do. I'm looking forward to that. I'm hoping that the rumors are true on that. I would like to have Dragon Quest character in there. But would it be somebody I'd put in my own personal Fighter Pass DLC? I don't think so.
If we're talking absolute dream insertions, I'm going to choose Vice out of Skies of Arcadia.
Oh, yeah.
It makes no sense, but I want my boy in there.
I don't know how it doesn't make any sense. You got Sega. Sega's already got a good relationship with Nintendo. You got Sonic in there. Yeah. Throw him in there.
He's more of a cult classic. He's not really up there like Bayonetta or Mega Man, but...
No, but...
Darn it! Yes. Give me my boy!
Oh, man. I'm trying to think. Like, who else would I put in there? There's already so many characters in the game that I'm just like, man, they put in almost everybody I'd want in there other than Shantae and Shovel Knight.
I mean, the only Nintendo one that I'm salty didn't make the cut was Dixie.
Yeah, from Donkey Kong Country. Yeah.
I'm really cool that K. Rool got in, but I feel like if you had Donkey Diddy, Dixie, and K. Rool, that's it. You've got the best rep of the DK series.
Yeah.
It's a nice number. It's a nice number of reps. It's cool. She should have been in there, I feel like. But now the question of being who do we cut?
That's tough. That's real tough.
Can I cheat and say we cut Ken and replace him with Chun-Li?
Yeah, I'd agree.
I know that's not in the spirit of the question, but can we do that instead? Like, I'll let the other ones slide entirely. I'll even give advice. If we can drop Ken and put in Chun-Li.
Yeah, I feel like that was kind of a shortcut to get in another Street Fighter representative without actually having to put in all the work to make a whole character from the ground up. Which I get it.
I do.
But at the same time, Chun-Li is like not only she's so representative of Street Fighter, she's right up there with Ken, or right up there with Ryu.
Right.
Like she's a freaking legend.
She's like the first lady of video games.
Well, that's,
I don't mean that as literally the first female character. I mean like in a presidential status type of thing.
I suppose. I was just thinking, maybe that's more like Samus's domain, but sure.
Yeah, but even Samus, you didn't know it was her until you beat the game. She took the hood off. Chun-Li's right there.
Oh, true.
That's breaking people with those, you know, amazing legs.
It's a good point.
Spinning bird kick, come on!
Yeah, it would have been great.
Up B, side B, it worked. Oh, give me God.
It would have been great. It would have been so much fun, but eh. Oh, well. I don't know. I don't know who to get rid of. It's hard to say. Well, I didn't even choose five, did I? So, whatever. There you go. There's Joker. Then we could get into music and stages, and man, it's... You gotta have themes that represent the characters, so of course I'd want to have the classic themes for Shovel Knight and Shantae, their main themes. So, and yeah, I don't know. There's so much in there. For like a stage for Shovel Knight, I guess would be like Plague Knight stage. I do love Plague Knight stage.
That could be fun.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know. Maybe the final boss from Shovel Knight would be like a cool stage too, with the moving platforms, and have Shield Knight assisting on the bottom, so you can jump between platforms with her. That would be cool. Yeah, I don't know. It's a deep question, man. It's a good one though. I like it. We ready to move on? Standard Q&A?
I think so.
All right, let's power through these. First one is from Jim. Over the past year of the IDW set of comics, we have seen three new male villains and a possibly third brand new female hero character based off one of the revealed Sonic Annual covers. I think that has been pretty much confirmed. So this is a bit of an older question. I'm sure a major focus will be to further establish these new characters, but do you think we will be seeing any new villainesses or male hero characters in the IDW comic series later on?
Maybe. I say that because we're not going to see anybody new for the rest of the Metal Virus saga. The focus now is on the Metal Virus plague and how our cast deals with that. I certainly have ideas for additional characters here and there, but I don't want to go too nuts with it just yet. Part of the reason we add the characters that we did was that they could fill certain roles that the game cast did not already present, and to give the book its own little unique flair to make you see that this is, you know, IDW Sonic, not Sega Sonic or any other incarnation.
Right.
And at this point, even speculating about season 3 stuff is way too far down the line to even throw out a knowing smile about. So, The answer is probably. I mean, the book's going strong. I see no reason for it to stop, and there's endless possibilities of what we can do with it.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, but I don't think there's anything immediately on the docket.
Alrighty. Next question comes from Brody M. Hey, guys. If Sonic continued their partnership with Archie on the original Sonic comic series, how would you have celebrated the 300th issue and plan to reach 400 issues?
Eventually, I'll be getting to Lost Hedgehog Tales when things finally clear up and be going over what the plans for number 300 were. Because we had them. They were in the pipeline. They were in the process of approvals when things fell through. So there was a plan. It was, you know, not to undermine myself here too much, but it would be a big Sonic and Freedom Fighters versus Eggman kind of turning point adventure. For 400, I don't know.
Yeah,
like, I had plans. Oh, I certainly had my grand long-term plans, but I hadn't planned out another 4 years of material at that point.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ian, come on. Why didn't you plan out another 4 years of comic books? Come on.
I like my long con, but even I have my...
And finally, last question comes from James M. Ian, could pre-SGW Silver somehow be the love child of Amy and Shadow?
This stems from some weird dots you could connect. And I wouldn't even say pre-reboot Silver. I mean Silver just in general. Because
I suppose? Isn't Silver from 200 years in the future?
See, that doesn't make sense. But you have the leaked internal documents for Sonic 06 where they specifically say Silver is basically Trunks.
Okay.
And if you're looking at the analogs within Sonic, which there are a fair number, Vegeta's basically Vegeta, and the only female character we really have that's prominent, a la Bulma, would have been Amy. And people started making connections there. And that was initially just a ha-ha moment. But then when Sonic and the Black Knight came out, and my Arthurian lore is really rough, so excuse me here, but Shadow was Lancelot, I believe. And
I thought that
Amy
was Knuckles. But whatever, he's one of them.
Or was he Galahad?
Whatever,
again,
it doesn't matter.
I'm misrepresenting the myths very poorly here, but the knight that Shadow represented and the character that Amy did, Nemu, had a child together, and that knight was represented by Silver.
Oh, no.
And that made a lot of people go, now, wait just a minute here. Now, I think it has been officially word of godded as no by Izuka-san at one of the Summer of Sonics. And somebody said, this is starting to add up somehow. And he's like, no.
Well, first of all, if you're taking Sonic and the Black Knight as some sort of canonical gospel, then I got bad news for you.
there's just enough there to make you go, huh. But there's nothing concrete to it.
Okay.
So if there is some long lost plan that Shadow and Amy hook up and Silver gets shot into the future, a la Kal-El, I don't know, but that's where that rumbling came from, and I don't think it holds much water.
No, it's very awkward and weird. That's why I threw it in here. All right, well, we have officially reached the end of the Q&A, which means we have also reached the end of this episode of the Bumblecast.
Before we wrap it up, we're going to give a big thank you to everyone who makes this show possible. Before my voice gives out, big thank you to Daniel H., Eric F., Connell T., Alex P., Frederick, Andrew D., Scruffy, Matt, Saturn, Flecky, Duas, Dizdin, Chris A., John B., Jennifer R., David C., Revan the Light, Lisa M., David M., Daniel B., Mike B., Samuel P., Sam Cybercat, Digama F., Wow, Dragon Superfan, Brody M., Neil H., Justin G., Dan M. S., Adam T., Silly String, Takaro, Lee H. K., Chavel, Don B., San Fritz, Taco Elgato Comics, John M., James K., Adam B. T., Overthinking Films, and Ron. You new folks, welcome. You threw me off.
Yes. That's okay, though. We still appreciate your support.
Absolutely.
Very much appreciated.
Everyone new is welcome, and everyone who has stuck with us this long, you're all super awesome.
Yes. All right, Ian, where can the folks find you on the internet after they're done listening to this fine, fine show? It's if I say it's a good show, then it's good, right? That's how it works.
If you say it, it will be.
Okay, good. All
right. So it has been spoken, right. So it shall be.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Head on over to BumbleKing.com. That's got my website, my body of work, my con appearances, and the release schedule for all the books that I'm working on, as far as I know. You can also follow me on @IanFlynnBKC on Twitter, which is basically the same thing.
All right, and of course you can follow me on Twitter @KyleJCRB, and you can head on over to KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast and my other show, Nitro Game Injection, which also streams live Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time over there. So head on over to KNGI.org /listen, where you can find all the information out on how to do that.
You can follow the show on Twitter @BumbleCast, and you can reach us at BumbleCast@Yahoo.com.
And don't forget to head on over to the Bumble store and get yourself some Bumble gear at shop.spreadshirt.com/Bumble store.
And you can catch, if you're a patron, you can catch exclusive live stream gaming Sunday evenings, usually around 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just make sure that you follow @BumbleCast for exact times and dates.
Yes. And don't forget to also go check out our YouTube channel for the archived version of our Team Sonic Racing stream that we did, at the time this comes out, last week. But at the time we're recording it, a few hours ago.
That's going to wrap us up for Bumblecast episode number, 92? We hope you enjoyed us geeking out about Kid Icarus, and we'll see you in 2 weeks for episode 93.
I think we're on 92. I hope we're on 92. I hope I didn't lose count at some point.
We'll see you next time one way or the other.
Wouldn't that be
Good night.
Wouldn't that be awkward?
It's also tough when you're recording a show and your cat decides to walk over the keyboard repeatedly.
Oh, is that what happened? I was looking at the show notes and all of a sudden yes. I saw enter and it just
That's ran. Why the link now says...
I fixed it. So... I was just confused, like, oh, okay. Now I know who to blame. The cat, of course.
You've been listening to The Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at BumbleKing.com and KNGI.org.
Don't steal my opinion. I'm joking. You can have my opinion. I don't want it.